Good morning. Today we're going to talk about a very important topic in terms of how to understand history, broadly speaking, Jewish history, and specifically how HaKadosh Baruch Hu relates to the world and how it differs at various points throughout our history. We'll start with the Gemara in Yuma. I'm Rav Yehoshua ben Levi. Lama nikra shman anshei Knesset HaGdola shechziru atara liyoshna. Why are the anshei Knesset HaGdola, the authors of the Shemona Esrei, called the anshei Knesset HaGdola? What made them so great? That they restored the crown to its original luster. Asa Moshe Amar Hakel HaGadol HaGibor Vanora. Moshe Rabbeinu praised HaKadosh Baruch Hu with the phrase Hakel HaGadol HaGibor VeHanora. Asa Yirmiya VeAmar Nachrim Mekarkarin BeHechalo Aye Nora Osav Lo Amar Nora. Yirmiya said Gayim Ar Mekarkarin BeHechalo. Where is his Noros? Where is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's awesomeness? And thus Yirmiya concluded that it was inappropriate to praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu with the word Nora, because the Midah of Noraos was not manifest in the world. Goyim were disgracing the Mikdash of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And thus when Yirmiya praises HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he says, you see this in footnote 2, Hakel HaGadol HaGibor Hashem Tzvakos Shemo. He leaves out Nora because he did not perceive that Noros. Now, of course, Yirmiyahu was aware that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was awesome. But it was not something that he saw in the world. It was not something that was manifest in the world at the time that he was prophesying. And thus, he leaves out the word. Asa Daniel, Amar, Nochrim mishtabdim bevanav, ayeg vurosav, lo amar gibor. Daniel said that non-Jews are persecuting his children. Where is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's gvura? And thus he leaves out gibor. The same thing. Daniel only praises HaKadosh Baruch Hu according to that which he perceives. And thus, in a world where HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not display Gvura, he does not praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu with Gvura. And thus, the Pasuk says, Ana Hashem Hakel HaGadol VeHanora. But he leaves out Gvura. Asu Inhu, came the Anshei Knesset HaGadola, V'amru, Adiraba, Zuhi Gvuras, Gvuraso, Shekovesh Es Yitzro, Shenosein Erech Apayim LaRishayim. Came the Anshei Knesset HaGadola and they said, no, we can perceive in his behavior a gvura as well. Meaning to say, the Anshei Knesset HaGadola also lived in a world of Hester Panim. They also lived in a world where evil was dominant and trampled over good. In a world where Nachrim Mishtabdim Bivanav and Mekarkarin Beheichalo. And nevertheless, they were able to say HaKadosh Baruch Hu was a Gibor. Why? Because we perceive his Gvura in that which he is Kovesh Es Yitzro. Shenosein Erech Apayim LaRishayim. And likewise, Ve'eloheinu Ra'osav, She'elmalei Mora'o Shalkadosh Baruch Hu, Hayach Uma Achas Yecholo Liskayim Bein Ha'umos. How can one nation exist in the world? The fact that the Jewish people continue to survive despite their enemies, despite those that are trying to persecute them and destroy them, the way the Medrash puts it is, Gedola hakivsa sheomedes bein shivim ze'evim. How is it possible that a lamb stands among 70 wolves? And here too, even in the world that we live in which evil is sometimes dominant, we're able to perceive God's gvura and noraos. V'rabbanan hechi avdi hachi, V'akri takanta detakin Moshe. How is it that Daniel and Yirmiyahu left out that which Moshe had instituted? Meaning to say, how could they leave out Gvura and Nora when they praised HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Amir Belazar, Mitoch Shiyodin BaKadosh Baruch Hu Shamitihu Lefikach Lo Kizvu Bo. It would have been a lack of honesty to praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a midah which they didn't perceive. I heard once from Moshe Shapiro, a mashal, we, for example, in the summer, we don't say Mashiv HaRuach HaMarid HaGasha. Why? After all, when do we say Mashiv HaRuach? We say it in the component of Shmona Esrei, which is Shvach, in the second bracha. So I understand why we don't say V'sein Talu Matar in the summer, because Matar is a klala b'yemos hachama. But why wouldn't you be Mishabeach HaKadosh Baruch Hu for being Mashiv HaRuach HaMarid HaGashem? And the answer is, like we see in this Gemara, and like the Rishonim say in Brachos, that we are only Mishabeach HaKadosh Baruch Hu through Shevach, which we perceive in the world. And thus, in the summer, when we don't see HaKadosh Baruch Hu being Mashiv HaRuach HaMarid HaGashem, we're not Mishabeach Him in that manner. Aye, Tchias HaMesim. We could talk about that. That's an important but different discussion. Now, that's exactly what this Gemara is saying over here. The Gemara is saying that Daniel and Yirmiyah, they didn't see HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Gvura in the world. They didn't see HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Naros in the world. And thus, they thought it was inappropriate, almost a lack of honesty, to praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu in that way, even though they certainly knew that it was true. They read the Torah, HaKel HaGadol HaGibor V'Hanor. It's not that they denied it, but they simply looked at the world and didn't perceive it. And the question then we have to ask is, what changed? What was it that the Anshei Knesset HaGadola were able to appreciate that Yirmiyahu and Daniel did not? In what way were they Machzir Atar Liyoshna? So let's see one more Gemara, which has a very similar theme, and will help us come to an answer, Be'ezras Hashem. This is the Gemara you're all familiar with, the story of Titus from the Agadatan Gittin, which describes the deplorable, despicable acts that he did in the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Ma asa, what did Titus do? Tafa zona biyadav nechnas beis kachi akadashim v'hitzia sefer Torah v'avera la avera. Titus was looking to perform the most heinous, grotesque abomination possible. So he takes the Sefer Torah, he rolls it on the floor of the Kodesh Kedashim, and is Boel Azona there and there, right there. V'natol Sayef v'gider es ha-parochas v'nasenes v'ayadam mevatzis v'yotze v'kasavar harges atzmo. Amar Chanan, Abba Chanan Omer, mi chamocha chasin ya, mi chamocha chasin v'kasha, sh'ata shomeya ni'utzo v'gidufo shel oso ha-rasha v'shose. How great are you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that you could see, you could witness this deplorable act, the most heinous, grotesque, possible act, and your shosek. Debei Rabbi Yishmael Tana, mi chamocha ba'ilim Hashem, mi chamocha ba'ilmim. And it's in this line that we see the answer to our question, the same idea that we saw in Yuma. The Yesod is, and this is an idea, we'll develop it shortly, I think that we see it in the Ramban, we'll see shortly in the Maharal, Rav Tzadok develops it, other thinkers, Rav Kook and the like, continue this idea. This, I heard this particular explanation of the Gemara from Rav Moshe Shapiro. And the Yesod is very, very, very important. Let's look at the two psukim that Debei Rabbi Yishmael quote. Mi kamocha ba'ilim Hashem versus mi kamocha ba'ilmim Hashem. When was the first verse stated? Kriyas Yamsuf. Kriyas Yamsuf, of course, was the greatest manifestation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hand in the world. The greatest possible nes. No nes nigla is greater. HaKadosh Baruch Hu splits the sea. It is so magnificent and an amazing display of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's power that Klal Yisrael say Shira. And they say Mi Kamocha Be'elam Hashem. Witnessing this miracle brings them to a recognition that there is nothing else. And it's through the Nes that they see and perceive and recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu's greatness. going forward a couple thousand years, we have the destruction of the Second Temple. Titus being bol azona bebeis kodesh hakadoshim on the top of a Sefer Torah. The exact opposite. Instead of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's showing his hand in history, he's silent while this despicable act takes place. And here too, Debei Rabbi Yishmael says we see the godless of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's not mi kamocha ba'ilim Hashem, but mi kamocha ba'ilmim Hashem. Who is like you among those who are mute? You, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, are showing your gvura not through your strength in an overt sense, like in Kriyas Yamsuf, but through your silence, that you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, are an ilim. This is the idea that the Anshei Knesset HaGadola perceived. Yirmiyahu, Daniel, when they saw HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Kedusha being trampled upon, not Akom Mekarkarim Baheichal, so they felt no choice but to leave out the praise of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But the Anshei Knesset HaGadola realized, no, Mi Kamocha Ba'ilim Hashem, your Gvura is your Shtika, that you could see this and still be quiet. We asked before what changed. And the answer is that if we very broadly divide Jewish history, world history, history in general, we can divide it into two very, very broad stages. There are further divisions that are appropriate, but two very broad stages. The first is a stage of Gilui Panim. It's a stage of Nisim. It's a stage of Nevuah. It's a stage in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu shows his greatness through overt miracles. And hence, Kriyas Yamsuf and the like, though they didn't continue to that extent during the first Beis HaMikdash, there were Asara Nisim B'chol Yom. There was Nevuah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke directly to human beings. During the second stage of history, it's not a stage of the development of the Torah Shebichtav. There is no longer Nevuah. It's a stage of the proliferation of the Torah Shebaal Peh. It's a stage of Hester Panim. It's a stage where HaKadosh Baruch Hu no longer performs overt miracles the likes of Kriyas Yamsuf. And it's a stage in which we have to and we're able to recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu not through miracles like Kriyas Yamsuf, but through recognizing the Gvura and the Gdula of Hishtika, not through Mi Kamocha Ba'ilim Hashem, but through Mi Kamocha Ba'ilmim Hashem. This second stage is very different. And if we take this idea, we understand a lot of differences between the first and second stage. In the first stage, the Nisayon was not Kfira, as the Ramban writes and the Rambam writes. There was no one that denied the notion of there being a supernatural power in this first stage. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or at least some type of godly existence, was clear and obvious and manifest to all. The Nisayon was perhaps Avodah Zarah, saying there are multiple powers, or serving the lower powers, whether it's Shadim or Kishuf or the like. But it wasn't rejection. In the second stage, the opposite is true. It became possible to deny that there's any God. The Nisayon was not primarily that of Avodah Zarah, but it was one of atheism, or quasi-agnosticism, denying HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Hashgacha, and the like. In that first stage, nobody could deny the supernatural, because it was clear and obvious and manifest. In the second stage, it became possible. It was a different Nisayon. Nobody, or at least nobody reasonable, would accept the concept of Avodah Zarah anymore. But instead, they struggled with something very different. It says in Seder Olam that the rise of Alexander Mukdon was parallel to the termination of Nevuah. Ad kan hayu neviim esnam ruach hakodesh mikan va'elach hat aznecha ushma divrei chachamim. After the rise of Alexander, so there was no longer nevuah, and now hat aznecha ushma divrei chachamim. We look to the chachamim for direction, for MS. At first glance, this is just saying an idea we all know, the Gemara Bava Basra, nitla nevuah min hanevi'im, and nitla l'chachamim, or lo nitla min hachachamim. But there's an addition here. The notion that this parallels the rise of Yavan, the rise of Alexander. What's the pshat? What is the association between the rise of Greece and the termination of prophecy? And what is the nature of this shift from nevuah to chachma? If you take a look at, skip for a moment to page 7, the pasuk in Koheleth says, "Gam ezeh l'umazeh asa Elokim." And Chazal in the Gemara Tesvav, Chagiga Daf Tesvav, understand that what this means is kol mashe bara kadosh baruch hu bara kenegdo. Bara harim, bara gvaos, bara yamim, bara naharos, Rebbe Kiva Omer, bara tzadikim, bara rishayim, bara ganeden, bara gehenim. The idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates the world with opposite forces. There's tov and there's ra. There's tzadikim and there's rishayim. Zeh luma zeh bara Elokim. They're opposite forces. And these opposite forces are what allow for bechira and allow us to freely choose HaKadosh Baruch Hu and that which is right. In the first stage of history, what was the Zeh l'umazeh? In the first stage of Jewish history, the Zeh l'umazeh, on the one hand, we had HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we had Nisim Gluyim, we had Kriyas Yamsuf, we had Nevuah. And the Zeh l'umazeh was Avodah Zarah, was Kishuf, was Kochos HaTumah, was Kefi Pshutam Shel Mikra, powers of evil that people could use to even tell the future, a almost opposite of Nevuah. And with this we understand the connection of the termination of prophecy to the rise of Alexander, the rise of Greece, the rise of Yavan. Because what did Yavan reflect? Yavan reflected the notion of Chachma. Yavan reflected the idea that everything could be understood and that nothing exists unless it can be proven. Yavan reflects the notion that there is no supernatural. That is one of the things, of course, that they preached. That there is nothing but teva. There is no such thing as magic, and there is no such thing as prophecy, and there is no such thing as hashgacha, and the like. And the two things rose and fall at the same time. That is why Mishakam Alexander, Pascha Nevuah, Umikan Va'elach Hat Aznecha, Ushma L'Divrei Chachamim. If you take a look at source 4 from Reb Tzadok, he explains this beautifully. Kemo Shematzinu Bizman Shimon HaTzadik, Shahaya Mishyari Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. We find in Chazal that Alexander and Shimon HaTzadik are always opposites. That's why the many stories, they interact in the way in which they do. Shimon HaTzadik was from the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. Shehem Yastu HaTorah Shebal Peh. This was the period in which the proliferation of Torah Shebal Peh began. Az Haya Kenegdo Alexandrinus Mokdon Virabo Shehefitsu Hachachma Yevanis Shehuminus Vapikorsus Shezelu Umaze Ukemotion is Barbimakum Acher Shebizman Shayatzadik Tzarech Lios Hisgalos Atorah Shebechtav Az Chachmas Mitzrayim Veachar Kach Bebavel Haya Od Asafim Vechartumim Lumas Shehaya Azbi Yisrael Nevi'im. Keneged the Nevi'im, there were Chartumim. And that was appropriate during the time of the development of the Torah Shebichtav, which was through Nevuah. Uvizman sheyischil hispashet chachmas hat. Avodah Zarah, Nevi'im, Kishuf, etc. We're going to talk a little bit in a couple of moments specifically what Chartum and Moran did. They actually have power and the like. We'll get there. Uvizman shehischil lehispashet chachmas haTorah shebal peh, at the time of the rise of the Anshei Knesset Gedolah and the like, shehu al hagavan misechel hachachamim. This, of course, is based on sechel. Shebe'emes hu ma shemofia bahem Hashem yisbarach. Torah shebal peh is no longer based on prophecy. It's based on chachma. It's based on seichel. When you study Gemara, so it's seichel that's operative. We find a pasuk, we have an idea, we have a stira, maybe this answer, maybe that answer, we have a question, we have an answer, shakla v'tarya. Hischil etzlam l'umaseh chachma sivanis. Parallel to that, chachma, in terms of interpreting the Ratzon Hashem and the MS, we see a rise in secular wisdom. The golden age of knowledge, Greek philosophy, Greek science, that's parallel to the development of the Torah Shebal Peh. Hischil etzlan l'umas echachmas yivanishu gam kein ma shemachadshim misichlam. Val ze ne'mar v'im yishtu b'nei necha shem ha'umas olam tiroshcha shemirameiz l'Torah Shebal Peh. And with this, of course, we understand a very otherwise baffling idea, which is that when you look at the simple reading, Pshutan Shel Dvarim, of the Torah Shebichtav, and the way Chazal understood it, there were these things all over the place, whether it's Kishuf or the like, where there seem to be these real powers of magic and the like. And of course, we're very troubled because we don't see, at least most of us, don't see magic anywhere anymore. There aren't any Chartumim. The magicians of today are masters of illusion, perhaps. David Copperfield and Houdini and the like, it's not magic. It's illusion, it's sleight of hand and the like. What happened to all the Kishuf? If it's real, if it's true, if it really existed, we should see it. And the answer, of course, is no, because we don't live in that stage in history anymore. It's not appropriate now. The Zel U'mazeh is not there anymore. There's no Nevuah, and there's no Nisim Geluyim, and there's no Torah Shebichtav. So there isn't a need for Avodah Zarah and Kishuf and the like. Now, our goal is to recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Hester Panim. And this explains the notion and the nature of Torah Shebal Peh, which is, of course, now the Ikar Limud. The Gemara says in Sanhedrin, B'mach Shekim Hoshivani Zu Talmud Bavli. The Talmud Bavli is marked by Choshech. What does that mean? It's like we said, when you study Gemara, Talmud Bavli, is like a blind person or going into a dark room and groping. You go into the room, it's totally pitch dark, and you feel something. Well, what is it? It has four legs. Well, maybe it's a chair, maybe it's a table. I see, oh, there's a back. It must be a chair, right? We don't know what's going on, but through grappling and groping and asking questions and answers and havaminas and maskanas and back and forth, that's how a conclusion, that's how the emes is reached. But that's b'mach shekim hoshivani, it's choshech. That's why the Talmud Bavli says tashma, not tachazi. And yet, at the same time, we find that there's also a certain intellectual superiority to the sages of the Talmud Bavli, even over those of B'nai Eretz Yisrael. Because Eretz Yisrael had a remnant of the Gilui and the Ashkacha. There was greater clarity, but they lacked the same type of kinyan that is accomplished through Choshech. And that's the association, like we said before, between Chanukah and Torah Shebal Peh that you see in the Gemara. Because it's Mishakam Alexander, so then Hat Azna Choshma L'Divrei Chachamim. That's part one of what we're going to do today. Part two is that we mentioned and to a certain degree presumed that when the Torah talks about Kishuf and the like, that those things are real. And what we're first going to do is talk about, is that something that's clear, obvious, and agreed upon? And second of all, to the extent that it is true, why is it true? We briefly answered that question by saying Zel Umaseh, but still, what does it mean? What do we mean by saying Kochos HaTumah? To what extent do these things exist? And through that, we're going to come to another understanding of Hein Hein Gvurosav, the idea that we started with from the Gemara in Yoma, but perhaps a deeper understanding. So firstly, does Kishuf exist? Did it exist? The simple reading of the Psukim certainly does indicate that it does. In many places, most prominently, the Prakim in the beginning of Sefer Shmos. Rashi, for example, seems to adopt this when the Pasuk says, V'lo yuchlu achartumim, the Chartumim couldn't succeed in producing the Kinim, the third of the Makos. Rashi says, why? Why couldn't they do it? She'ein hashed sholeit al birya p'chusa mikasaora. Meaning to say, beforehand, they were using Maisa Shedim, and they were able to replicate Dam and Svardeya, but Shedim are not able to produce something smaller than a Saora, and thus they couldn't replicate Kinim. But you see that until then they were able to. And Ramban goes even further. The Ramban in Source 4 points out that, what does it mean, lo yochlu achartumim? Not even like Rashi, that this was a limitation in their power of magic, but siba me'es Hashem yisbar chaysa, sikel atzasam birtzono, shehakol shelo v'akol biado. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu prevented them from being able to do it. They tried, and they failed. Well, according to Rashi, why'd they try? They could never be sholeit al birya pachos mikedasha. The answer is that, generally speaking, this is something that they were able to do, and the nes was, and that's why they said, etz balokim hi, was that they were this time unable to do it. Ramban explains, why is it that the Nevi'e HaBaal, all day long, in the famous clash at Har Carmel, were trying and doing this and that. And why was it that Eliyahu had to daven that they not be successful? Because generally speaking, they were. You could answer it was just an act of desperation. But that's a little strange, Ramban says. The answer is that they were able to do certain types of things. There's a famous discussion in the Rishonim in Sefer Shmuel Perek Chaf Ches, in the story of how Shaul, after the death of Shmuel, desperately tries to find out what's going to happen in the impending war with the Plishtim, which looked very desperate, and how he dresses up, not as the king, and approaches a Balas Ov and asks her to tell him the future, to tell him what happened. And the Psukim seem to describe that she does have some sort of vision. She's certainly not a nevuah, but about what's going to happen in battle. She's somehow able to bring up Shmuel from the dead so that Shmuel can answer Shaul's question. How can this be? If you look on page 4, the Radak quotes two positions who debate the nature of this. V'ra'inu machlokes bein ha-ga'onim b'davar hazeh. V'kulam nishtavu ki ma'aseh ha'ov hevel v'tohu v'divrei chazav v'hitul. Generally speaking, ov is nothing more than charlatry. It's nothing more than an act. Aval yesh om ki lo diber Shmuel im Shaul v'chas v'shalom lo ala Shmuel mikivro v'lo diber el ha'isha. Aval ha'isha asasa hevel v'ramos. The truth of the matter is that, of course, Shmuel did not come. It was all an act. This was a wise woman. Didn't take such a brilliant person to figure out that this was actually Shaul. Shaul was very distinct in his appearance. She recognized him, though he had acted out, had dressed up. It didn't take such a brilliant person for her, to realize that the Jewish people would be defeated by the Plishtim. And thus, she made it up. It was all an act. Umasha Amar Machar Atau Vanacha Imi Miderch Svara Amar Zeh Zeu Perish Rav Shmuel Ben Chafni Hagaon Zal Ve'amar Al Pi Mashmaus Divrei HaChachamim Zal B'Gemara Ki Emes Haya Shechiesa Ha'isha Es Shmuel. Rav Shmuel Bar Chafni admits that the simple reading of the Gemara, forget the Psukim, implies that she did in fact bring Shmuel back. However, lo yekublu hadvarim b'makom sheyesh makhishin lahem min haseichel. We can't accept something that is keneged haseichel. It's keneged haseichel to accept this idea that there's such a thing as a baal asov that's actually able to do something of this sort. And thus, despite the pashtos, we're going to say that this was just an act. As we've discussed at various points in the year, even last week to some degree, this is a reflection of the rationalist tradition in Jewish thought, and the notion that if it doesn't make sense, it can't be, and appropriately we will interpret the Psukim or Chazal in such a way as to accord with Seichel. Yes? It sounds like, from this quote, I didn't look up Rav Shmuel Bar Chafni Hagon inside, but the way the Radak presents it, it sounds like he doesn't want to outright contradict the Gemara, but he's moda that it doesn't seem like that's the view of the Gemara. Much like earlier in the year, we saw the Rambam. So when the Rambam seems to be going against Chazal, so either he'll reinterpret Chazal, meaning to say he'll interpret them shelo kipshutam, so as to be rationalist, or he will say that this is one view in Chazal, but it's a das yachid, or there's a machlokas about this point, and even if the machlokas might not be presented in this particular place, if you look elsewhere, you'll find a disagreement. And presumably, we find similar things here, meaning to say, certainly he wasn't denying the legitimacy and the greatness of Chazal, but somehow or another, the psukim have to be explained in such a way that's reasonable. The second interpretation, quoted by Radak, also agrees, generally speaking, that there is no such thing as balas ov, that there is no power of necromancy or the ability to bring people back to life. Avor Rav Sadia v'Rav Hai HaGaonim amru, emes hu, ki racho ku shateda ha'isha ha'sidos, v'kein shetichya hi es hames, b'chach mas ha'ov. Ach, habore yisborech hechya Shmuel, kedei l'saper l'sha'ol, es kol akoros ha'sidos lavo, alav, v'hi ha'isha sher lo yad'a, b'chol eile, nivhala, kemo shenemar, v'tizak b'kol gadol. The truth of the matter is, there is never such a thing as ba'al ha'sov. And generally speaking, it's all fake. This time, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to deliver a message to Shaul, and therefore, once he allowed her to experience this type of quasi-prophecy, and that's why she herself jumps back and she screams and the like, because she wasn't accustomed to this. It's like in Harry Potter, right? What's her name? The lady who... see you guys... Right, so she never has nevuos, but once epis. So that's what Rav Sadia Gaon explains here. Never know. Ve'asher amra ha'isha esmi aale lecha divrei hitulim heim. She starts off joking. Ki da'ata haya lasos kipin haga ela divrayim. So both of these explanations presume that there is no true power. There are others, however. As we saw, based in some of the earlier sources that say no, that there is one can use kolchos hatama to do this sort of thing. And hence Shaul, who was a gadol, made the attempt, right? According to either of Sadia Gaon or Rav Shmuel Bar Chafni, you're left with the question, what was Shaul thinking? Of course, you could ask that about a lot of things Shaul does. But this has more of a problem. It's not the same type of act as the other acts that Shaul does, which are difficult to understand. The Ramban writes in Drashas Tars Hashem Tamim on the bottom of page 4, there's an idea that you see many places in his Perashat HaTorah, this notion, this dichotomy that we've been talking about until now, these two stages, and what it was that Yavan introduced. V'im kein, kol mi sheyischadesh lo davar keneged hatolda, bein al yidei chartumim u'mechashvim, bein al yidei navi, miyad yada v'yamin b'chiddush. Ramban here says a startling thing. How do we know, or what is proof, to chiddush ha'olam, to bria yesh me'ayin? This is, of course, an idea that the Ramban frequently talks about, because the denial of chiddush ha'olam was something that was very prevalent in his time, both among Jews and non-Jews. The idea, the question, the debate about whether the world was created yesh me'ayin or was not. Was Aristotle correct? The eternity of matter. This was a fiercely contested issue in this period, both among Jews and non-Jews. As we talked about earlier in the year, when we studied the position of the Rambam on this matter, and the Rambam presents four theories about how the world came into an existence. Aristotle, Plato, the Torah, and the Kalam philosophers. So this was an issue. The Ramban therefore gets back to it again and again. And he says, one of the proofs for Chiddush HaOlam is Nisim. Okay, that we understand. The Rambam writes that as well. That a Nes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's interaction, why exactly we won't get into details, but is impossible according to the Aristotelian perspective of the universe for God to become involved and create a Nes. But then he says, you want another proof for Bria Yesh Me'ayin? For Chiddush HaOlam? Chartumim, Mechashvim, Kishuf, Chartumim. That too. Because if you accept Aristotle, then of course you couldn't have such a thing as Chartumim and Mechashvim. Aristotle would agree to that. If you accept my position, you can't have such a thing as Chartumim and Mechashvim. But the Ramban says that's proof for the creation of the world. Umikan tir'eh, achzorius rosh ha-philosophim v'kashio yimcheh shimo. From here we see the achzorius of Aristotle. Shehu makchish kama dvarim sherou rabim v'ra'inu anachnu amitasam v'nisparsimu ba'olam. He denied things that were witnessed and seen by the entire world. The Nisim, for example, of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Uva'osan azmanim hakadmonim, kigon yamim shel Moshe Rabbeinu alav ha-shalom. In the olden days, in that first stage of history, during the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, for example, shayu nodim lakol. Everybody acknowledged it. Everybody agreed to it. Like we said, there was nobody who was an atheist. There was no one denying the existence of the supernatural at that time. Ki achachmos be'oso hador, hayu kulam ruchnios. In that time, all of the chachma was ruchni. Whether it was positive spiritual forces or negative spiritual forces, but the chachma related to these spiritual forces. Kigon, inyane hashedim v'amachashvim, umine hakatraos, Lemeleches Hashemayim. Lefi Shemachmas Kirvasam Lebrias Olam Ulemabul, Loayashum Adam Machish Bechidish Olam, Lamamre Beeloha. Their closeness to the creation of the world and the Mabul, which was a clear manifestation of the recreation of the world, so there was no one that denied this notion. Ella, Sheimavakshin, To Elles, Mitzad Avodas Hashemesh, Vayarech, Vamazalos, Bosin lahem tsuros lekabel koach elyoni. But what did they do? They did avodah zarah through tapping into other forces. Now, on the one hand, this is very similar to the idea of the Rambam. The Rambam writes in the beginning of Hilchot Avodah Zarah that how was it that idolatry evolved? It's a very strange notion. How could we go from a world of universal recognition of God, whether it's Adam and his children or the like, or Noah, and how could that evolve and lead to a world of idolatry? How could it happen? How is it possible? And the Rambam presents an evolution which basically was along the following lines. People went ahead, they had difficulty relating to such an abstract God, a God that you can't hear, that you can't see, that you can't feel, that you can't touch. And they looked at the magnificent creations of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the sun, the moon, the stars, and they praised them and they worshiped them as a means of serving and worshiping God. And eventually, over the generations, people forgot that this was a means to an end and focused on it as a means, as an independent end. And thus, they forgot that they were building temples to God as a way of, building temples to the sun as a way of praising God, and simply worshipped the sun. That was the evolution of idolatry. The Ramban has a very similar idea, as he's alluding to over here, but it's slightly different. Avodah Zarah is not as much of a narishkeit for the Ramban. It's equally wrong. It's equally aser. It's equally problematic. But it's not as crazy, because one can indeed tap into these spiritual forces of evil. Now, what are they? The Ramban here writes that whether it's Shadim or the like, or Mazalos or Kishuf, there is something here. There is a way. There is a whole world of spiritual forces. The Zel Umazeh of the Kochos HaKadusha that we described earlier. Later, again, Be'ezus Hashem, we're going to read a couple of chapters from the Nefesh HaChaim, and he's going to explain a little more what the nature of these things are and why they exist. But for now, what we've seen is that in order to allow Bechira, HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to allow there to be these other forces. They exist within the universe, just like there is Teva, and a human being has the capability of using Teva to subvert the divine plan or the divine will, in the sense that I can use physical forces to do that which God doesn't want me to do. I can take a gun and shoot a person, Rahmana Litzlan. I can light a fire on Shabbos and build a house and the like. So I'm using physical forces to go against the Ratzon Hashem or the Ratzon HaTorah. So too, a person can use spiritual forces to go against the Ratzon Hashem and the Ratzon HaTorah. That's the idea that the Ramban is saying here. Ella, Shayim Evakshin, To'eles Mitzad Mazalos, Avodas Hashemesh, Vayarech, Vamazalos, Va'osin Lahem Tzuros, L'kabel Koach Elyoni. So they made these Tzuros, they made these images, in order to be Mekabel, these Koach Elyoni. We talked about this at the very beginning of the year, when we talked about the Sir La'azazel, the notion of the Ramban, that we are somehow trying to bribe these forces, that in a certain sense it even makes its way into Avodas Hashem. That's why it's such a problematic mitzvah, the Ramban discusses, and the like. Ki afilu bein ha-philosophim kasav b'sefer altis mash... I don't know who this is. This was one of the earlier Greek philosophers before Aristotle. And the Ramban writes that in pre-Aristotelian, pre-Socratic Greek philosophy, so even the Greek philosophers acknowledged that there was this power. Shemiviyim bitzuros ruach v'dibor. If you look at these early Greek philosophic works, they too understand that there are these powers. V'kasher kamu ha-yivanim. Again, note how the Ramban, like we saw in the Seder Olam and Reb Tzadok and the like, ascribes this transition to the rise of Greece. Vehem am chadash shelo nachlu chachma kasher bier baal sefer hakuzari kam ha'ish hayadua v'uhemin rak b'murgash. That person, Aristotle, arose and he denied all that which wasn't murgash, which wasn't able to be perceived by the senses. V'chipes chachmos murgashos v'hikchish haruchnios. He denied ruchnios, both ruchnios of tov and of ra. V'amar she'inyin hashedim u'maisak shafim efes v'ein ba'olam pe'ula rak le'tivayim v'davar yadua u'miforsam she'inim kein. Of course, the idea of Aristotle is one, like we said before, that there were Jews that believed in it as well. As the Rambam writes in the Hilchos Avodah Zarah, Halacha, Tes Zayin of Perek Yud Aleph, V'dvarim elu kulan divrei sheker v'chazav heim, Vehem shehitu bahen ovde kolchadim hakadmonim lagoye haratzos kedeshi inagu acharehan. How was it that the priests of idolatry convinced people to follow them? They became good at magic, but not real magic, not black magic, but sleight of hand, illusions. Vein roi li Yisrael shem chachamim mechukamim lihimashech behavalim elu velo lahalos alev sheyesh toeles bahen. I'm skipping a little. Ki amamin bedvarim ha'elo, anyone who believes that these types of things exist, ukiyote bahen, mechashe belibo shein emes, v'davar chachma, avalatora sartan, einan ela min hasichlim, umechasre hadas, uvechlal hanashim v'aktanim shein da'atan shleima. So anyone who believes that there is such a thing as kisha for the like is a fool. As we've seen, this is a very great debate. We talked about last week from Rav Kook how we shouldn't say the Rambam when it comes to something like this is just copying the Greeks, that his position too comes from a spirit of Torah. And the notion, as we talked about earlier in the year, how we do have these two traditions, the mystical tradition, the rationalist tradition, and going back to what we talked about last week in terms of Eilu Ve'ilu Divrei Elokim Chayim. Nathan.
There is some sort of a power to these things. He thinks that that's the philosophically true position, but the Talmud Gaon and the Bir HaGrav says that the Rambam was misled by his understanding of the philosophy. So it sort of seems a little bit ironic that the Rambam thought he was being true to the philosophical perspective, and others would say that he was misled by it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So there are other makoros here, some of which I skipped. If you'd like, the Rambam here, Mor Nevuchim, Rabbeinu Bachya, earlier the Abar Benel, and the like. If you'd like some more makoros on this debate, and they do bring up some additional issues, I'd like to turn now. Though we're almost out of time, perhaps we'll continue this next week from at least a different perspective. The Gemara in Sanhedrin. The bottom of page 5. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Lama Nikra Shman Kshafim, Shemakhishin Pamalia Shel Mala. Ein Od Milvado, Amar Rabbi Chanina Afilu Dvar Kshafim. So what does Makhishin Pamalia Shel Mala mean? So if you look at Rashi, it means that they overturned the Gzeros of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the idea here, Rashi does seem to accept the position, as we saw in this Perush al HaTorah before, that there is such a thing as kochos hatoma and kishuf in the real sense. And the idea that they're makrish pamalya shalmala is the idea, as we said before, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts powers in the world that allow a person, using their free will, to subvert his plan. So, like we said before, just like a person can use a gun to shoot a person, one can tap into these powers to annul a gzera of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But the Gemara says that that's only on a certain level, on a certain plane. But when one reaches a higher level of understanding and truth, and that is the understanding of Ein Od Milvado, so then these powers have no efficacy and no power. Because ultimately, of course, when we say, and when the Ramban says that there is the ability to use Shedim or Kishif or the like, it doesn't mean, Rahmana Litzlan, that they have independent force or independent power. No, ultimately, of course, everything is coming back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's HaKadosh Baruch Hu who gives these powers into the world. And thus, if someone's able to recognize Ein Od Milvado, Les Atar Panui Minei, as the Zohar explains, the idea that in reality there is nothing besides HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So this idea means that in reality, even Kishuf doesn't exist. It almost seems to say that in reality, nothing exists besides HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Be'ezras Hashem, next week, what we'll do is we're going to try to explain a little bit what does that mean. And this, of course, was to some degree the subject of debate between various schools of thought, some understand between Hasidim and Misnagdim, between others, and we're going to try to explain this issue, this question. What does it mean, Ein Od Milvado? And how is that different than pantheism and the like? So we're not going to have time to do that this week. We'll continue with that next week. But what this Gemara is saying is that when somebody does recognize that and truly appreciate that indeed Ein Od Milvado, and that there is no true independent power to this Kishuf, just like there is no independence to anything besides HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then the powers of the Mechashvim will have no power over him. And thus the Gemara says a story that illustrates this point. Hahi Issa, Dahavaka Mehadra, Lemishkal Afra, Mituse Kari de Rabbi Chanina. There was a woman, a Balas Kishuf, who was trying to weigh the dirt under the feet of Rabbi Chanina and somehow use that dirt to harm him. Amar La, Imistayas, Zili Avidi, Ein Od Milvado Ksiv. He wasn't concerned. If you want to do it, go ahead. I have no fear, because Ein Od Milvado. The Gemara asks, Ein Ivamer V'Yochanan Lama Nikmash Makshafin Shemakhishim Pamali Shemala, that Kishuv does have the koach to overturn the Gzeira of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore Rabbi Chanina is acting recklessly. Why is he not afraid of these Mechashvim? And the Gemara answers, Shani Rabbi Chanina Dinafish Chusei. And the way the Nefesh HaChaim explains this, and we'll see it next year, next week, Be'ezras Hashem, in the context of his broader discussion. But what Rabbi Chanina here is saying is that not Nafish Chusei, he was such a big tzaddik, he was so Mechal Hanes. No, that would have been inappropriate. Just like you can't be so Mechal Hanes because you're a big tzaddik and do something reckless or dangerous or harmful when it comes to a physical danger or harm, so too would be inappropriate in this case. The pshat is that when somebody recognizes and internalizes and truly believes Ein Od Milvado, then Kishuf can have no sway or power over them. Now, this idea, as I said, even this Gemara, is not going to be conclusive. As we said before, there's a debate about this. If you want to see a differing perspective on the Gemara, take a look at the Meiri over here, which is on the top of page 6. But it nevertheless would seem to me that the predominant view in Chazal, as well as Rishonim, at least later, and Achronim, is the notion that there is such a thing as these types of supernatural powers, and thus we have to try to understand what exactly they mean. And we'll, Be'ezras Hashem, continue with this Mahalech, but with a slightly different approach from the Nefesh HaChaim next week. Have a wonderful Shabbos.